Have you ever wondered why people like doves but hate pigeons?
I can't say I put a lot of thought into that, but I'm sticking with you.
This is the Speak the Unspoken podcast, where we help mission-focused brands unlock their potential. Our goal is to break down barriers holding your organization back and help you make bold decisions in strategy, communication, marketing, and culture. Hosted by Jason Jensen with Pat Padley and J.M. Boyd, we hope you enjoy the show.
And today, we're going to be talking about brand position. And that's basically why doves have... They have better brand position than pigeons because they're pretty much the same thing.
Okay, so talk me through that one.
Well, let's define what a brand position is first, just for that sake. So at the core of it, it's what space you hold in someone's mind when they think about you. So one good story, one of my favorite stories about brand position and how you just shift it can change something dramatically. One of my mentors told me the story is this marketer goes into this manufacturer who made sunglasses, and they're having this meeting and saying, hey, we're really struggling to sell these things at $99 a pair. And the marketer's holding them. He's like, man, these things are like really sturdy. And the manufacturer says, yeah, they're pretty much bulletproof. And the marketer says, from now on, these are no longer sunglasses. They're protective eyewear. And they started selling them to the U.S. military for $500 a piece. So this idea that the space in somebody's mind that you hold is super important. How somebody approaches thinking about you actually changes the whole interaction that they have with you. And I'm not advocating for like naming things cool or different things just so you can increase your profit, but I am all about trying to figure out how to present something in the most attractive way, especially when we come to brands that are trying to present the gospel or these faith-filled things in a way where somebody else can understand them and interpret them in a way that actually moves that organization forward.
So can we actually pull back to pigeons and doves for a second?
Yep.
So the relation there is that, you know, we think of a dove and automatically we think of weddings and
The Holy Spirit,
or all these different things, where you think of pigeons, and the first thing you think about is
a busy
street center,
poop on the top of
pooping on you.
Yeah, exactly.
So
makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, it actually dates back way further than that. So doves have been associated with like the symbols of peace and romance all the way back to like Greek mythology, and pigeons, like really not until like the 30s and the 40s, particularly in New York, like pigeons started to become a nuisance, and like people were like, oh, they're pooping on me and like all this stuff. And so like the CDC was like looking at like, oh, like do they actually carry diseases? Well, they actually don't, but somehow it like got like framed that like, oh, they're the ones that are like carrying all these things, but like actually all birds carry different, you know, things.
Right. So pigeons know more than other birds.
But right. It's just like negativity that got like...
It got stuck.
Were they once called rats of the sky?
Well, I was looking this up and it says rats with wings.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is an interesting article, but it's all about the origins of our misguided hatred of pigeons. But it is true. You look at like the positioning of them, you know, like, oh, it's white and like
rats of the like, sky.
No, it's the same thing gross. Though. Playing off the rat element is like the rats and squirrels, right? Some people love squirrels. They think they're so cute, but essentially they're just rodents with better PR. Mm. You know, they've got fur. They jump around.
I do think the tail is inherently cuter on a squirrel.
For sure. Have you ever seen a wet squirrel?
No, but thankfully, squirrels don't get don't get wet that often.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a major rebranding of pigeons anytime soon.
No, so. But there has been sort of a bit of a repositioning of rats, right? So you think about like the rat carrying the pizza down the subway sort of thing, and all of a sudden rats are a little bit cuter, or they're a little bit smarter, or you know, there's like this, New Yorkers seem to have this appreciation for rats that the rest of the country doesn't, because they're more, you know, you see rats doing weird things all the time in New York.
I can't get on board with that.
Me neither. Yeah. We had a choice at Christmas time to get our oldest a rat or like a little pet. And it's like, you look at the rats and you're like, no, we're going to go with a hamster, you know, like, because they're so much cuter.
Why would that even be a choice?
It wasn't a choice. We went with hamster. Anyways, so a lot of, like, we got into the definition of like the space that you hold in somebody's mind. And I think that it's such an important part. And going into more of the spiritual aspect of it is, I would love to see mission-focused brands be articulating what God has called them to. And so more people can understand how he's working, how that organization is working in that specific part of the kingdom. And this is all part of our brand foundation series. And this is a, you know, the next step of thinking through, you know, we've talked about why, we've talked about what your brand promise is and how those two are kind of related. Why is why you exist, brand promise is how you keep, live that out really well across all the organizations, organizational activities. Then we've also talked about your brand story and seeing how God has moved over time and figuring out who you are and listening to all three of those things as well. And then we also talked about your hows or the values that you hold that have been guided by the Spirit and where you've seen the most fruit come from listening to that and responding to that. I think this is the next layer, is talking about how do we think of ourselves and also how do others think about us?
Sure. I think the others think about us is a huge part of it. I mean, we mentioned in an earlier episode, the definition of brand is at a root level, as Jeff Bezos says, is, you know, what other people say about you when you leave the room. And this is what do we want them to say about us? We have to understand what part of, what position we want to hold in their minds and hearts when we're out of the room.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, I think, where you exist in the marketplace, if you will,
mm-hmm.
right?
So in relation to other people.
In relation to other people. So there's a couple of different ways to think through brand position. It's sort of like, what is related to our brand promise, which is what we need to express, like the brand or the fruit of the brand, right? The positioning, that idea of the unique space in the market and in the mind, like there's different postures, there's different strategies you can take. And all of them have nuances and implications in how you communicate as well.
What's an example of that?
Well, let's just like, maybe the easiest way to do this is kind of think of through like some brands we all know. So think through, say, Taco Bell versus Chipotle, right? They both do fairly fast Mexican food. Although technically Chipotle would be in like the fast casual, like that's kind of an emerging marketplace in the States. So, but for years, Taco Bell sold cheap Mexican food and was like the leader, right? And then Chipotle came on the scene and they said, oh, we're going to stand for quality instead of price. So I can go spend $10 at Taco Bell and get a lot of food, or I can spend $10 and get like a burrito bowl with some guac, and like it's very different. So the positioning there is standing for quality versus standing for like just purely like bulk in price. Right. And that's a competitive positioning too, right? So you're mm-hmm. looking at yourself sort of against the marketplace.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's do another one.
Yeah, give me
another one. Think of Gillette versus Dollar Shave Club. So Gillette's been around. It's been the giant forever.
The best a man can get.
And Dollar Shave Club came in. Sure, they're going to peak. They're pretty much the same quality. So it's not really like versus the Taco Bell Chipotle thing. It was like Chipotle's all in on quality, like non-hormone meats and all that kind of stuff. Dollar Shave Club is actually changing, disrupting the marketplace. Mm-hmm. One, we've got like a subscription model. Hey, it is also cheaper. And oh, by the way, quality is table stakes. So it's almost removing from the competition.
When they say, do I really need 4 effing blades?
Yeah,
you know, right. Like that's the line from their commercial.
Right. And so it's almost, I would say that's more of like a changing the game kind of disruptor piece. Mm-hmm. That's almost like their kind of position or their strategy.
So yeah. There's a difference between position and posture though, right? But they're really closely related. I mean, you're sort of the expert in this area, so I'm looking for you to flesh it out for me.
Yeah, I think the main thing to think through is there's probably a couple different ways to think about it. And me coming from the kind of marketing side and looking at like, I think of it like, okay, are we like a lifestyle brand, a product brand? It's a little different when you put it in the spiritual lens, because you also have to look and say, okay, what is God calling us to do? Where is God calling us to be in the marketplace? I think in the church and in ministries, often it's hard for us to think about other ministries as competitors. Mm-hmm. But in reality, they are competitors, right? They're competitors for donor dollars. You might be competing in the same space. Like, look at the Christian college ministry space. Right. There's a number of different people that are on a campus doing different ministry, different religions, etc.
How do you separate yourself from the pack?
Yeah, so there's, just like when we talked about why you exist and those kind of things, all of these things actually help differentiate you, but also where is God asking you to play within the marketplace? So we can take the business logic or the sort of the marketing logic from the secular world and frame it into both what is God calling us to do and also like what strategically is the right place to fill in the mindset of the consumer as well as in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. I also think it gives you a clear understanding going through this process of thinking, what is my lane and how can I stay within it versus what are other people's? And we're all building the same kingdom. So it's really about, competition is a weird thing. I don't actually think like ministries compete with each other. We need more people doing more things.
God allows all of them to exist.
Exactly.
Right?
I feel like oftentimes
the harvest is plentiful.
The mind in the ministry the mindset in a lot of ministries is that we are competing with each other, but it's because we haven't defined what our position in the market is, what separates us. So in a previous episode, we started talking about, you know, what is the part of the kingdom that God's calling us, the distinctive part of the kingdom that God's calling us to build? Or in the corporate world, you would call it like, what's your unique value proposition? Or what gives you your unfair advantage to do something?
Yeah, and maybe the better way to think of it versus competition is more around identifying where you currently are in the marketplace, mm-hmm. identifying the other people in the marketplace. So mm-hmm. you don't have to call them competitors if you don't want to. And understanding their position in the marketplace. And then I think figuring out, okay, well, what is our uniqueness as a brand? What is the Lord calling us to do? Okay, what are our unique selling propositions, like you're saying, JM? Mm-hmm. And then formulating a strategy and messaging around those things. Mm-hmm. And that's basically brand positioning.
What I love is that when you actually do this with an organization, when you actually put it on a map of saying, where are we, where are the others? You start to automatically see, okay, where are we now? And where do we know, as we've gone through, you know, why and how defined our brand promise, you start to see, okay, here's where we are, even in our own minds, but this is where God's calling us to be. And this is where we need to strive, you know, what we need to strive towards.
Yeah, I think in a healthy way, people start asking the question of how's what I'm called to do complementing what others are called to do? Because if the Holy Spirit is the master planner in all of these things and he's animating each mission,
right?
We have a duty and a responsibility to say what is ours and like figuring out and finding that so that we can complement the whole thing. The one thing that we talked about is college campuses,
right?
You know, like we've worked with a few
college ministries.
Exactly. Yeah. And thinking through, there's a whole bunch of different ones. The wrong question would be, which one is better? Right. I think the right question would be, how are they different and how are they helping different people along different parts of the journey?
Right. And how do they complement each other?
Exactly.
Because when we started looking at that together with one of our clients, we recognized that, it actually... when they're on a campus together, they actually help each other do what they do better.
Exactly. And how if each one of them was asking the question, Holy Spirit, you know, like, or God in, you know, Trinity, you know, Jesus, what do you want from me?
Right.
And discerning that super well, I think that they could very well, we need more,
right.
You know, like we actually need more people doing this, not less. And I think we can forget that at times. And there are, I don't know if there's millions, but hundreds of thousands of young people going through universities and colleges who don't encounter missionaries because we don't have enough of them.
Or we don't, certain individuals on a college campus just aren't going to mesh well with a certain characteristic.
Absolutely.
Or a certain way one organization positions themselves, but they are going to mesh well with another one.
Yeah. Which is why I think you can't really talk position until you talk audience.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. We were talking, Pat, you were mentioning.
Yeah. So I think, well, when we talk about the who, right, yeah. There's sort of two who's. We touched on a little bit last episode about who's sort of on the bus, right?
Yeah. So we have why, how, we're talking about what a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now we're jumping into who.
Who. And so there's who's on the bus, which is like internally who, you know, mm-hmm. what are the resources needed and those kind of things. I think on this, we're just going to touch basically more on who we're going after. So one, I feel like back to this idea of called and anointed, which I know is one of our core values, but we use it as a discernment and as almost a strategic tool sometimes, is who are you actually called to go after?
Mm-hmm.
So, and you can also shift your strategy on the who, like you could be an organization that currently is communicating a ton to your donors, but actually like the Lord might be calling you to actually communicate more toward the people you're actually ministering to and just show that to your donors. So it's a shift in the communication strategy around who. But when we talk about who, a lot of people dive straight into things like personas, which is a pretty well-known thing. If you don't know what it is, it's basically like trying to put verbiage and a language and almost name somebody, you know, like...
This is Johnny Jacobson and he likes...
Our ideal Netflix customer, and, basically.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
This is how he spends his
Susie
day.
Susie Cash Cow, or, you know, yeah. Like, yeah, like, actually, I had a previous client who one of their main one was the Glamaw.
Not here.
Not here.
Yeah.
Yeah. At a previous agency, there was the Glamaw, and it was like the rich grandma who would like just send all the stuff to your kids or whatever.
What are the downfalls of personas?
Yeah, I don't personally like personas.
Me neither.
And it's a helpful tool sometimes, but it sometimes gets you locked in a box too much when you're thinking through audience of this is the only person. And one of the other downsides is, particularly in the world that we live in now, you're always shifting context.
Right.
So not just context in like from a marketing communication standpoint, like the device that I'm using, like, oh, am I looking at this website on my laptop or am I looking on my phone? But imagine, like, Jason, let's say before coming in and recording the podcast, you just got terrible news from your wife. That shifts your context and where you're at in your day. And even though we know, like, you're, you know, mid-30s, CEO of an agency, you have a bunch of kids and you're Christian, like, we know all these facts about you,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't, like, your shift in context completely throws some of that out the door because I would want to communicate to you differently,
yeah.
knowing that. And so so that's one of the reasons I don't like personas, which is why we typically look at things more like how can we actually think of the person and empathize with them.
Yeah, I think that's the overall risk, is personas can they can shortchange empathy,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. and so because of this factor of context.
This is, you know, we talk about how do we take tools from the world, marketing tools or different tactics and different things, and apply them to the faith. This is one of those ones where you go, you can't actually really apply persona well to a faith-based ministry perspective. Because when we're talking about walking with someone, they're going through a faith journey. They're at these different stages. It's not one stage. So if you're a product, you know your target market. You can sort of create a persona around that, because you're attacking them or going after it in a certain period of time, right when they're in the context for it. If you're selling hot dogs at a baseball park, you know who your persona is, you know? Whereas if you're walking with someone along a journey that may take a couple of years, their context is going to change.
Yeah, it's messy.
Yeah,
ministry is messy, and so the things that I like to that I like to use are sort of two things, and I think it'd be best to probably unpack some of this stuff in a more deeper way. But IDEO really made empathy maps a big tool that people use.
So you can and to Google clarify, that. IDEO is an agency that focuses on design thinking, and we can
and innovation. Yeah, yeah. So they build a lot of products, but it's looking at a person as a person and saying, what are they thinking? What are they feeling? What are the things that they hear either from their friends or their families or influencers? Or what are the things that they're seeing in their environment? What are they saying? Like, what are the things they say to their children? You know, what do they do? Like, is there a routine that they do? What are the pains or frustrations they might be feeling, or what are the things that they need to gain? And so like it's a little bit deeper thinking, similar to persona, but it's less factual, less demographics and those kind of things, and getting more into the personhood of somebody. And then mapping that along the ministry journey. This is why I think we need to do another episode on this, because it that context, like you're saying, JM, like it's a messy journey from going to pre-evangelization to, hey, I've actually encountered Christ now, and like now get me deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So there's a lot to think through here, but the idea of who you're reaching is important, and to, particularly as we think about brand positioning, because if you don't have a good baseline for who you're trying to go after, then you can't look outwardly to what's in the marketplace, and you also can't think through what's the place in their minds that I want to kind of occupy as an organization.
And I just want to be clear too. I want to feel like brands that use personas, they're great. I just think they have some limiting factor to them when it comes to empathy. So I think that's important.
Empathy is incredibly important in ministry.
Yes. Right. So let's talk about like posture as opposed to positioning, and what like postures are that brands take. And I think the basic difference between a position and a posture is a position is where you fit, and a posture is within that space that you occupy in somebody's mind. What are you kind of doing?
Or literally, like posture is how you sit, how you stand, what you're, are you on an offensive mode? Are you defensive mode? Are you, I mean, the best example I always come back to is Coke versus Pepsi, because it's completely recognizable, right? So Coca-Cola is always has, I'm blanking on what their brand promise is right now, but you think about every Coca-Cola commercial you've ever seen, they barely show people drinking Coca-Colas, or if they do, it's about the lifestyle. Their most viewed commercial is one of this family going through generations, or you know, having different kids, and it's all about the experience. Whereas Pepsi has, for the most part, landed on their position is not about this enjoyment and experience and aligning with this, that, you know, that side of it. It's on, they're always talking about, well, like their last Super Bowl ad was Pepsi's okay. Is it just okay? No, it's like, it's better than okay. And don't just, they're always on the defensive. And that's always been their position. Think back to Pepsi versus Coke Challenge, you know? That's where they were. The one time they strayed from that, it blew up in their face. You know, they tried
like the marching.
Kylie Jenner.
Kylie Jenner commercial from the previous Super Bowl, I think. And it just, everyone just mocked the crap out of them. But if you would have, if you think about that commercial, if you've seen it, if you would have applied Coke to that, you wouldn't have had any problem with it.
I think you would. It was pretty cringy. Was it pretty cringy? In and of itself.
No, but, I'm not remembering it.
But I think Coke can pull off epic for some reason that Pepsi can't at times.
Right.
It's the just to read their brand promise, just it's to inspire moments of optimism and spirit.
Right.
So there's this sort of like bigger thing that they're going after. And so that posture would be more like an arm wrestling posture. Like they're both the big guys in the marketplace. They're constantly going back and forth, and which is interesting because if you actually look at the stats, the same amount of people drink Coke in Pepsi. And it's really actually, this is why the Pepsi Challenge was so brilliant, because they were doing this sort of like arm wrestling punching thing. That it, this was, I don't know, was that the 90s or something like that? And so they're doing that thing, that like jab, 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 because you actually cannot tell a difference. I don't care how many people say, I know that's Coke.
No.
I know that's
you just
Coke.
Got a bunch story of for you. Listeners. I got a story for you. So I was having food. My Pakistani friend in this university I went to, he had me over for some Pakistani food. And we're eating food and he pours us Coke. And I'm like, oh man, this Coke just tastes amazing today. And he laughs. He's like, it's Pepsi. And so, yeah. So I feel like that was there's no placebo. There was no test the first time, I think. So,
yeah.
I don't really drink Coke or Pepsi, but I still haven't just muscle memory of buying Coke.
But the arm wrestling position is like, one, you're kind of always fighting with each other, but also there's this, oh, I get that this product is just like this thing, right?
Right. So it's comparable.
Yeah, it's easily comparable.
Right.
Another example of that I like, and I mentioned Charity Water in one of the previous episodes, is they do just such a brilliant job of positioning themselves between their donor being the hero for making water in all around the developing world. Like, you're the hero because you're giving us money, and we're giving that money 100% with no 100% of your funds, we'll track them and send them to these other heroes who actually do the drilling locally, and they spend days without their family so that they can bring water to these people. So they can boldly brag about the donor and the local hero.
Right.
And that gives them just this position of, they can say more and more and more, and gives them the freedom to say, we need to do more. We need to do more. You guys need to give us more money because we're helping these other people. And it just opens up so much asking potential in a ministry that relies on a ton of donor dollars.
This is the thing. One, you know, a lot of people have problems when it comes to the ask. They feel self-conscious about it, or different things, or it's a difficulty. You talk to a development guy and he'll be like, I got it covered. But it's because he's done it enough. But what's interesting is Charity Water has made it easy for anyone to ask for funds, because everything they've done is position themselves as the in-between. So they're never asking for money for themselves.
Yeah, I think that would be a great takeaway for people to think. I actually think the professional donor developers have figured out how to... They put themselves in that role.
The best donor developers do that, development guys.
Our team is amazing.
Exactly.
These young people on campus are amazing. Right. The leadership is amazing.
These missionaries out in the field are incredible.
You know, I wish I could do what they do, but I can't. You know, like, these are the kind of the phrases that they use. And I don't think there's any, I don't think that's deceptive at all. I think it's probably true. And the authenticity of that message and figuring that out is actually what helps a potential donor evaluate.
And this, I want to be clear, that's not the only posture you can take. It's a posture to take, but I think it's a really practical one to remember, because as a ministry, we leave that often to the development guy to hold that role and don't support him with communication and marketing that sort of builds him up to be that person. Whereas what Charity Water's done, so the whole organization is structured as that. All of their communication is structured as that. So it basically makes the development guy's job a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing, StoryBrand, Donald Miller, like, I think the one part he does really, really well is he talks about figuring out your story and all that kind of stuff. But he talks about this example of your brand should feel more like Yoda than Luke Skywalker. The temptation for all of us is to put our, like, we all want to see ourselves as Luke Skywalker.
As the apprentice?
You know, this Jedi who does all the cool stuff.
Okay.
The hero.
Yeah, the hero. And I think the beautiful part that Donald Miller is bringing to the equation is saying, hey, let's think of ourselves more like Yoda and helping people become the hero in whatever way that they could be, whether that be the ministry person, the donor, all that kind of stuff. I think that just going through that exercise is a super valuable one.
Another way that's similar, but it's slightly different, is if you think of, I'm sort of building because you're talking about story, right? One of the easiest story structures to remember is talking about the world that is versus the world that could be, in mm-hmm. positioning your brand actually in the middle of that. So almost as the problem solver. So think of it like, oh, you have this pain, you have this thing or whatever, like Tide detergent. It's like, oh, your kid runs around and gets grass stains on it or whatever, right? Oh, well, we have the magical solution, right? So, yeah. But that is a story structure that you can use as well, where you're saying the world that is versus the world that could be, and we're the link that helps you make the world that could be
yeah.
happen.
It's brand position is a lot about framing mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. conversation.
And I think if you want to get like really tactical for a second, there are, you can probably Google it, but there's like brand positioning formulas. Like if you want to write like a very like specific like positioning statement, I think it's really best when positioning statements aren't super robotic, like what I'm about to read, but it's helpful when they're actually inspirational. But this is basically like, if you're trying to unpack what brand positioning is, this is the basic formula that for insert whoever your audience is, your brand or ministry is your market. So like maybe it's the campus ministry that best delivers on, then you insert your brand promise, because our brand and only our brand can do it, and here's the reasons to believe. So it's really basically a statement that only you can deliver on. So as an example, let's think of like Walt Disney. So for the young at heart, the young and the young at heart, Walt Disney is a theme park that best delivers on the immersive and magical experience, because Walt Disney World and only Walt Disney World connects you with the characters and the worlds and the experiences that you desire, right? Mm-hmm. So like, mm-hmm. they're the only one that can do that. Like, look at them versus Six Flags. Mm-hmm. Like, it's completely different, right? This whole idea of that, and we've talked about that in their that magical experience, the whole where dreams come true.
The brand promise.
Yeah. And so they're positioning themselves specifically around that brand promise in relating that back to their marketplace and the place they mm-hmm. want to live, like in the mindset of their consumer. Mm-hmm. So
I have a friend who runs a powder coating shop. And so basically what they do is he wanted to be, it's a pretty undeveloped industry, at least around here, where you can get somebody doing it out of your garage, or you can have like more of a legit operation like my friend has. And basically if you do a bad job, you only notice that 5 years, 10 years down the road. So you have people like really skimping on the thing, on like the process and things like that. So his brand position is the way they frame what they do, which is a lot of brand positioning. That's what we're trying to do, is powder coating system for engineered peace of mind. So there's a few really clever things that he did in there. Is he called it a powder coating system, so that it's not just technique, but you kind of get this picture in your mind of like, oh, okay, there's a methodology to this thing. Yeah. There's this process for engineered peace of mind. So peace of mind is a phrase that he's borrowing. Engineered is like, oh, they're spraying things onto things and they're baking them into this giant oven and things like that. But using the word engineered makes it seem like every step has been architected. It's thoughtful, it's smart, all that kind of stuff. So in that way, they're positioning themselves against the competition who's going to say, I'm the cheapest, fastest guy.
Right.
And so then they're like, okay, well, we work for this engineering company that might be, we might want this giant pipe engineered. So we got a government contract, so price is not really our issue. We're going to go with the guys who are going to do the job right the first time, and it's going to last a long time. So that's the kind of business that they start to win, instead of
the one-off, like my lawnmower is chipping.
And give me 10% off, because, right. And can you Can you have it by tomorrow? So it really helps them frame every relationship that they have with their desired audience. You want another one?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember when Dove, like when they, this was a long time ago, I think before they really became this larger lifestyle brand, but they used to say Dove is not a soap, it's a moisturizing bar. Do you remember that? So
I can't say I remember it, Jason, but yeah, but I'm following you. I know from the advertisements, but
I was still in South Africa at the time, so it must have made a real impression on me. But thinking, like, you know, I was using, you know, Dove, and I was like, oh, like,
I was an Irish Spring guy myself. You know,
as a early teen, I'm like, is this cleaning me or just making my skin, like, you know, soft and smooth?
Were you really worried about that at the time?
No, not really, but I think, but. Definitely not their potential audience. I'm just using whatever soap there was available. But
no, I definitely think they sold a lot more soap that way.
Yeah.
Right? Like, to be
moisturizing
honest.
Moisturizing bars.
Oh, moisturizing bars. Sorry. They, yeah, you go along the shelf, you see Dove, and automatically in your mind you say moisturizing bar, you're not saying bar of soap.
And then you see it come out in their creative. It had this, like, almost like milk was being poured like filling up
the form of the bar.
The form of the bar. And you're like, oh, okay, like, now I see visual elements. So now you get into execution that supports your brand position.
Right.
And it just helps the whole system kind of click in place. And again, part of a brand foundation, it's everything has clarity and alignment.
Well, let me just say, Dove could never go into the lifestyle brand they are now in the position they hold in people's minds now with their whole campaign to be like the voice of voice of women. And they would never have been able to do that from a bar of soap. They had already made some ground and moved their position to this moisturizing bar.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. I also think that helped them get into, I think they were just in soap in the time. Now they got into other products. Yeah. And so the lifestyle brand helped them do that. And that shift over time is just brilliant. Yeah.
I can't break my mind from recognizing that the same company that owns Dove also owns Axe Body Spray.
Yeah, same one.
Completely polar opposites in brand and position.
Well, but Dove has evolved so much.
Yeah.
So I think, just to keep going down this for a second, I would say now Dove is not a soap brand.
No, they are.
No.
Dove is a beauty brand.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they've reframed what beauty is
right. In
culture. Because even if you look at their positioning and like what they do, they still have all the same product attributes that you're talking about, the softness, the moisturizer, those mm-hmm. kind of things, like in the benefits of that.
It's my favorite conversation today.
But they've reframed the value and the beliefs that they have around all of that.
And
this is why, yeah. And it's accessible to the average person,
right.
And here's what real beauty is, and... Yeah.
You know, that's why we think doves are better than pigeons.
Oh, it's come full circle.
So we should start a brand called like Pigeon Soap. You know, like...
It wouldn't
you
sell.
You know, like... And our rats from the sky.
Awesome.
What's the main... One of you guys, what's the main takeaway that you're hoping people apply?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, I think, okay... As part of your brand foundation, think through the position. So your brand positioning, which is defining both the unique space and the market for your ministry, as well as establishing where how you're going to differentiate yourself in your the mindset of whoever you're ministering to, your audience. And don't just look at it only from the business or like the organizational lens. You also need to ask, Lord, like, what is the place that we should be playing in? Where are the people that we're supposed to be ministering to? And if you can align all that, like through this brand foundation series, we've been talking about alignment and clarity. If you can align all that all the way back up to your why, I think your brand is going to be a solid and have a really great ability to communicate and internal clarity and alignment. And
makes it a whole lot easier to start communicating.
Yeah.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, you can subscribe and learn more on our website, glasscanvas.io. We're so grateful that you could join us. To everyone out there working hard to build the kingdom, keep doing work that matters.
This show is produced by Gareth Alexander with music by Jonathan Velasquez. Curious about any examples or resources discussed on the show? Check out the show notes for more info.